This is Crucial Tech, a podcast about technology that affects all of us in a format that allows you to consume it in the time it takes to go to and from the grocery store. I'm your host, Lou Covey, and I probably know more about it than you do. And if I don't, I know someone who does. But first, this episode of Crucial Tech is brought to you by Cyber Protection Magazine. Did you know that people who consume news in print generally trust that medium more than any other medium you can find, including social media? If you want to reach out to your customers and get them to understand that you are a trustworthy person, advertising in a print publication is the best way to do it. And in the cybersecurity world, with Cyber Protection Magazine, you are advertising in the fastest growing publication in the industry. So the next time you're thinking about advertising, why don't you take a look at Cyber Protection Magazine? People will trust you when you do. This week on Crucial Tech, we take a special interest in Martin Luther King Day, which is today, if you're listening to it on the day that we publish this. This is an important holiday for me. I'm not black, I'm white. I'm a 70-year-old straight white male and generally politically conservative, but I've been a civil rights proponent and activist for most of my life. And that came out of a visit that my mother took me on when I was 11 years old back to Washington, D.C., where we attended the Million Man March and I heard Dr. King give the dream speech, which affected me tremendously. And it's been part of my heartache about this country, about how we can't seem to solve the problem. And in my work in the technology world, I've seen nothing but discrimination, maybe not actively, but at least passively. And I understand the issue of white privilege probably better than most white people do. But I had a chance to meet and interview somebody that I thought would work well within the idea of the technology world and also my particular interest in equal rights for all people. Her name is Nicole Ford Darden, who is a brilliant, beautiful, charming, and very accomplished security professional who happens to be the chief information security officer for Rockwell, which is a big corporation. I had a chance to go to their automation fair in November at the McCormick Center in Chicago, and the thing was huge, and it was just about the Rockwell infrastructure, their ecosystem, their partners, their customers, there in this huge facility. And it struck me because I've seen this level of diversity within the security industry, and I was excited to see a person of this caliber, a woman and a black woman at that, serving as such a crucial position. And they asked me if I'd like to interview her, and I said absolutely, and I wanted to do it for Martin Luther King Day, and here it is. So the next voice will be mine, but we'll be I'm talking to Nicole. I hope you enjoy it. I hope it makes a difference, and I hope it also inspires some of you out there to do something about a career in this industry. Okay, Nicole, I am so happy to get a chance to talk with you here. And I want to talk specifically about the issue of diversity in cybersecurity, maybe a little bit on technology, because that, as I told you earlier, before we started this conversation, I've been working in tech for 40, 50 years. And it has been, you know, it has always been white male dominated. Yeah, and it's different from what I grew up with, but it's always been that way, and it's been frustrating. And over the past decade, people are talking about increasing diversity, and it never really happens. until I started covering cybersecurity about 3 years ago. And it's one of the things that excites me about this industry, in that I've seen more people of color, more women in positions of power than I have in any other area. And here I am talking to a young Black woman who is the CISO of one of the largest corporations in the world. I think that's absolutely fantastic. But I want to know, here's the thing, and I'm sorry, I'm running off at the mouth. One of the things I've seen in tech is that when you see a person of color or you see a woman in an executive position, it's generally marketing because there's no other options for them. So how did you end up as a CISO in a major American corporation?
So a couple of things, and I've actually talked about the fact that, you know, when I actually entered the world of cyber, it was IT, right? So I entered IT, which then became cyber. So yeah. And cyber kind of finds you, right? Now, I think people are a little bit more intentional about degree programs relative to cyber mm-hmm. and how to get into the field. And I think there are a lot of people who are doing a lot of mentoring right now to make sure that we're bringing in people of color into the field intentionally. But it wasn't always like that, right? We, mm-hmm. I started off in the military, spent a few years in the military, which was a really good foundation for me and really set the stage for my curiosity relative to technology and how it's being used. And I was able to parlay that into a career, not just in technology, but then into cyber. I remember having a boss when I was at the Department of Agriculture, and she was a Black female, which was rare, right? She mm-hmm. was fantastic. And so I remember her calling me into her office and saying, I need you to build a cybersecurity program. And I remember telling her, oh, I'm sorry, what? I didn't even know what she was talking about. I'm like, this sounds crazy. She goes, listen, you are a problem solver. You're a go-getter. I know you can do this. I said, well, first off, tell me what it is, and I'll start to do some research and figure it out. And that really opened the door to me building one of the first cybersecurity programs in the federal government. For the Department of Agriculture, the Office of Procurement and Property Management. And she was such an inspiration to me because she took a chance on me, especially, I mean, she took a chance on me in a field I'd never heard of and didn't mm-hmm. understand, that I had to quickly ramp up on and then become an expert. And so I'm expected to be an expert in cyber, and I've done that over a period of time. I've learned all of the technical pieces of cyber, what we need to understand and know in order to do the job well. I've served in, you know, different capacities. I've been in the, you know, DOD, the federal government, as well as the private sector. And I've been the CISO for major companies in healthcare, as well as manufacturing. So I've gotten a chance to see the good and the bad. And I grew up. As cyber grew up, I grew up, which I think is also a unique place to be. And that's really how do you set the path or forge the path for the future generations? And I think I've been fortunate enough to do that and really kind of be the first in a lot of areas, which I think has been really a unique experience for me and has really benefited the people that are going to come behind me.
Do you think part of the problem that corporations have with diversity is that they don't have people in charge of the programs for diversity? I mean, you're in the C-suite.
Yes.
And as you pointed out, you've been able to mentor. And there's a couple of young men that I want to talk to also for this podcast, and they'll come later. And they've mentioned how you've mentored them. So maybe is that the solution to diversity, is actually make your decision process diverse?
You absolutely have to. So a couple of things that I've done in my career, you know, a few companies ago, I made a decision and I was always going to have a 50-50 organization, 50% men, 50% women. That's how I started. I said, I'm going to be very intentional about how I hire people. I'm going to make sure that I have diverse slates. And I'm going to make sure that I have people that are part of the interview panel that are diverse as well, right? Because that breeds a chance to reimagine somebody's skill set that may not necessarily be cyber related, but can they thrive in this environment? Can they learn? Do they have learning agility? And so that's been really important to me. Mentoring, I'm a part of several different mentorship programs where I spend time with young people to explain to them what is the path to CISO. I do webinars and reach out to people who can really, they can call me their mentor because I'm there to make sure that I help lay the path, the groundwork, and just help them through some of the challenges of being a CISO or an aspiring CISO, or even just a rock star in the cybersecurity, industry, right? So how do you do that? And I think I've had some really good mentors who have helped me and took chances on me. And I want to do the same for other people.
Excellent. When it comes to the cybersecurity industry, though, the industry's got a real problem in that there's not enough people. So, and it's one of the things I've been telling young men and women that I see who are wondering what to do with their lives and where to get jobs. And I'm saying, go to cybersecurity. You can get training in 6 weeks and end up with a good paying job right away. So, because there is such a demand for personnel. So it's almost like the cybersecurity industry can't afford to be picky. They have to take the best people that they can possibly find, regardless of what they look like or what their background is. Is that about right?
You're spot on. So let me kind of explain kind of the conundrum we have, right? Mm-hmm. So in cyber, the way that we bring the job description is you have to have like 80 years of experience. You have to have, mm-hmm. you know, specific certifications. And really, we should be taking a look at those job descriptions, right? Because not all roles require that extensive amount of education, right? There are people who are just gifted in technology and would be amazing cybersecurity professionals. And I think we need to open that up, really look at the biases in our job descriptions, look at the biases in hiring processes, and really look at what do we really need? What are the skills that are truly necessary and focus on those? And what outcomes are we looking for, right? And that I think is important. I think I have people on my team that have communications backgrounds, right? They have communication degrees, or they have business degrees, or they have degrees in engineering. They don't have cyber backgrounds, but they're excellent cyber professionals because of the skills that they learned throughout, you know, over the way, right? So one of the things I've been talking to people about, and have a passion for this area, is that, you know, do you really need a degree, right? And that sounds really provocative, right? Do you really need a degree, or do you need the certifications, right? Or do you need the on-the-job training? Are there opportunities to really train people from the ground up on how to be a cyber professional and to be a competent one? I think there are opportunities. And so we have to look at these requirements that we put in place and say, are they really necessary? Are they getting us the right outcomes? And if we do that, I'm not sure that we would have this whole cyber, we can't find people, there's not enough people to kind of fill the roles, because we've opened up, right, the opportunities for other people and made it available for them.
You mentioned HR a little bit ago, and we've done several stories about employment issues and human resources and cybersecurity. And one of the common things we keep getting back is that the HR department really doesn't know what to look for. And so when they're putting out these job recs, I just read something about this, seven warning signs about why you shouldn't take a job at a particular place. And the top one was too many responsibilities. They will put like 20, 30 responsibilities of the job when no one person could handle that. It should be like 12. So how are you as a CISO working with the Rockwell HR department to say, what this is what we need?
No, that's a great question. So I am very hands-on when it comes to hiring. Mm-hmm. I write my own job descriptions. So that's number one, right? I think that I know the role best. My team, they know the roles best, right? And so there aren't like five, there maybe between 5 and 15 responsibilities, right? And we're going to look at how do we ensure that the person has maybe the top 6 or 7, right? Because that's what's most important in getting the job done. So we're a part of writing the job descriptions, making sure that we take any bias out of the job descriptions. Let me give an example. The biases I mean is, there were job descriptions in the past where we, if you were in infrastructure specifically, you had to lift 50 pounds. And the job description said you had to be able to lift 50 to 100 pounds. Now imagine if you're, you know, a woman, you're like, well, I don't know if I can lift 100 pounds, right? So do you apply for the job? Probably not, because that becomes a barrier for you. So we look for to write job descriptions where that we minimize the number of barriers and we make it an exciting job for people to at least consider. Then what I do is most of my team, we do the same thing. We post it on LinkedIn ourselves, right? We want people to know that there are real people behind these jobs, right? That we're looking for great people. And we try to write, you know, great paragraphs to say, hey, we're looking, here's a job. It gives them a sense of, oh, you know what? I'd love to go work for Rockwell. Yes, I'm going to apply for that job. So that gives it additional visibility. And then when we're going through the screening process, I try to be involved there as well, right? Because HR may screen somebody out that is, you know, really qualified for the job, right? Because they're looking specifically for them to have these 5 or 7 things. And they don't really understand the role enough to say whether if somebody's using different nomenclature because maybe they're in a different part of the world, doesn't mean they don't have the same skills, right? So it's really important to get involved in that screening process to make sure you're not screening out really good candidates.
Excellent. Well, Nicole, you just fill me with hope. I encourage the listeners, if you know somebody who's looking for a job, you're concerned about what the opportunities are, I still say cybersecurity is a great place to go. So that's it on our special tribute to Dr. King on his day in the United States. I don't want to wish you a happy Martin Luther King Day. I want to wish you an introspective one to think about these things. That's what we're here for. That's what I want to do, not only with technology, but just in general, to think about things as they truly are and maybe make changes that way. This has been Crucial Tech, a Foot Washer Media production, and I leave you with some words from that speech that affected me so much. Have a good day.
Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro is still languished in the corners of American society and finds himself in exile in his own land. And so we've come here today dramatize a shameful condition. In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.